Alan Kring Productions in association with the Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Financial Management MBA 440 for Spring Semester 2022.
Tonight, bonds. And when you get down to the basic, there is equity and there is debt. Now, the debt, the equity means ownership. Debt means you have to pay it back. So in other words, if I sell you a share of stock, that means that you are an owner of this company. And it's not my company, it's our company. If you buy that share of stock, that is ownership. You have a residual claim to the cash flows of the corporation. The prior claim belongs to the debt holders. They must be paid first. And then if there's anything left over, then the shareholders can get it as dividends and or they can get it plowed back into the company on their behalf. Remember, that corporation is the shareholders. That's who it is. So when they put that money back into the corporation, they are actually giving it to you, not as a dividend, but as an investment on your behalf in what you owe. Now, I'm going to say a few things here to kind of tighten up language. Oftentimes, and you probably noticed this, is that as you develop in your career and in your academic life, words and terms take on a different meaning or a more specific meaning than they used to. The common person would not see it this way, the way we say things, the way we view a term. So, for example, when I borrow money, I'm going to borrow some money from you. In technically speaking, I am issuing you a security, and you are buying it for the price of what I want to borrow. So in other words, in our technical way of thinking, the borrower is the issuer of debt. You'll hear me use these fancy terms, debt paper. The borrower is the issuer. The borrower is another term for issuer, a little bit even more deeper technical. The borrower is the writer of the debt instrument. The borrower is the seller of the debt instrument. The lender is the investor. The lender is the purchaser. Excuse me. The buyer of the debt instrument. Now, three kinds of debt. And there's a little bit of slippage. You'll hear me talk about debt, I'll say bond. And that kind of is a little bit loose and generic. A bill is a debt instrument with 1 year or less of maturity. A bill is a debt instrument of 1 year or less of maturity, immaturity. Well, I got a bill from the electric company. No, actually, you did not get a bill. You issued a bill. The electric company bought that bill and fronted you electricity, which has value. And now it's sending you a memorandum about that bill that you issued that the electric company bought. It bought it by providing you electricity. Now it's asking you to pay the bill that you issued. That seems kind of weird. I mean, you don't think of a bill that way, but that's what it is. And the tighter you hold to that thinking, the easier it gets for you to understand the world of bonds as far as tradable securities goes. Bad leg, bad back, bad age. Okay, so anyway. Okay, the next one is a note. A note, okay, here we go. Traditionally, a note was 1 to 7 years. But anymore, I mean, I saw this thing a couple of years ago. Netflix issues 15-year notes. And I thought, those aren't notes. Those are bonds. Bond used to be anything 10 years or more in length. But now that there's kind of like this slippage in there, technically, I mean, if you pin one of us old school traders down, we'd say, yeah, notes 1 to 7, maybe 1 to 10. And so that what them calling Netflix issuing 15-year as notes, no, Netflix issued relatively short bonds. A bond is a long debt instrument. A bond is a long debt instrument. 10 years or more, 15 years, 20 years. Now bonds, corporate bonds, or notes, usually 15, 20, 30 years. Government also does about the same. Now the government issues bills, notes, and bonds. They issue all of them to cover different cash flow needs. Corporations do too. One interesting thing about corporations, I can't remember whether I've mentioned this or not. I might have when I was talking about money and capital. Sometimes corporations will borrow money for just a short period of time, 30 days. I mean, huge corporations will do this. It's called commercial paper. It's like Microsoft will issue $100 million in commercial paper. They pay it in 30 days. Now, the interesting thing about this, it's called discount paper. Because what they do is they say, you tell us how much you will lend us if we pay you back $100 million in 30 days. Usually it's around $9,990,000. It's quick money for these short-term investors in debt instruments. It's safe. It's terribly safe. Large credit-worthy corporations do this all the time. It's discount paper because you buy it at a discount, and then you sell it back, you get your money back a little bit more than that. And the interest is the difference between what you lend them and what you get back. And it's not much because, I mean, it's safe stuff. Now, there are other discount paper, too. Treasury bills, those one-year treasury bills, they're discount paper. You get $1,000 back in 1 year. And you buy the paper at maybe $990, $980. I'm going to show you an example of that here in a while. But anyway, getting back to the main focus here. There's notes, there's bills, notes, and bonds. And you'll hear the term bond used kind of generically for all of them. Well, here's a bond, and it's, wait a minute, that, well, that's 5 years. Yeah, I know it's note, but we can say. I'm going to say something here. Oh, yeah, I got enough for a grand slam, so I didn't. I'm good. Okay. Could you do me a favor, sir? Can you tell me what is at the top of this?
Federal Reserve note?
What's that last word you said?
No.
What's a note?
Note is a
debt instrument,
yeah.
Right? Of what duration?
Okay.
You have to read these notes over. After a while, it's like, one of the things you've got to be careful with me is I'm an old trader, and I use this terminology every day. So when I talk to you, well, what the hell? I just told it to you once. Can't you know it? It's not quite as easy. I do appreciate that. But this is a note. Wait a minute. Debt? Yes. Because the Federal Reserve is promising to pay you back in 1 to 7 years. Well, how are they going to pay you back? Well, they'll just print another one and give it to you. And you're saying, oh, wait, whoa, we've run that by me again. That's right. Matter of fact, they'll take this one back, shred it, and they'll issue, print one, maybe two more. If they want to expand the money supply, they'll print two more. Hell, last 5 years, they've been printing five more. Of course, which creates inflation, but you see, wouldn't it be great if you could pay your bills by printing more of your bills? Yeah, that's exactly how the government does it. And if you think that's phony, well, it's sort of like Wile E. Coyote. Remember that the only time he fell down when he ran off the cliff was when he looked down. So don't look down and we're all good, okay? Anyway, now a couple of things about bonds and notes is
they always have a face value of $1,000. $1,000 is the face. You'll hear me call it face. You will be paid back on the maturity date $1,000. Now, this is not like consumer debt. You see, with consumer debt, you borrow money and your payments service the debt, they pay interest, and they amortize the principal. They pay down your loan. Corporate and government debt does not work like that. Corporate and government debt, they pay you interest, a coupon, periodically, and then at the end, they pay off the $1,000 face. You say, well, wait a minute, corporations borrow more than that. Yes, I know, but the standard is $1,000. So in other words, technically, a $100,000 bond is a hundred little mini bonds. But we always use $1,000 as our standard in corporate and government, which is what this is about. Again, consumer loan payments, they pay the interest, they service the debt, and they also amortize the loan. They pay down the balance. Corporate and government do not do that. All they do is pay the interest on that face value. If it's an 8% coupon, you get an $80 check for each bond every year. Now they divide it into two payments, $40 every 6 months. We'll get into that a little bit. Trust me when I tell you that if you do these on the calculator, they are so easy. It works out. Back in the day, doing these by hand, some of the calculations would literally take you an hour to do. Now it's about it's a split second to do the very same thing. So be glad for these calculators, and be glad that I am quite comfortable with having you use a calculator like a boss. Okay, so let's say some corporation borrows $100 million. It issues $100 million. Now let's say that this is 30-year paper. Okay, so they issue it today. Excuse me. So February the 7th of 2052. They will pay back the $100 million. Along the way, every year in two payments, they will pay the coupon. If it were a 6% coupon, every year they will pay $6 million in interest on that bond. That's just how they do it. And then at the end, you see, there's a problem with this though. Right at the end, that company has to cough up $100 million in one shot. No, it doesn't. The bond agreement will work out so that the corporation is actually paying down, putting into something called a sinking fund, a sufficient amount of money every year, so that when the maturity date happens, well, actually, well before that, there's a bank account that has that payment in it. Now, there are a couple of different weird ways. The book goes through a couple of oddball ways. The standard way, the way we used to do it, is, okay, $100 million, you owe it in 30 years. Well, we're going to calculate how much you have to put into the bank at some really safe, low interest rate for 20 years so that we know 10 years or 5 years in advance you've got your $100 million already taken care of. That's the way sinking funds used to work. In other words, the agreement between the borrower and the lenders is going to include, yeah, you darn well better have enough to pay us back the full amount when it's due. And as a matter of fact, a few years before it's due. Now, there are all kinds of variations on the sinking fund. The book goes through a couple, in my experience, those I had seen them, but they weren't very common. One way that some corporations do this sinking fund is that, there are a couple of ways it used to be done. One way was that the company would agree to buy back some of its bonds every year until they were all gone by the time the maturity date happened. So the debt was closed. Another way that some corporations did it was with what were called serial bonds. You want to borrow, let's say, $5 million and pay it back in 10 years. Well, what you would do is you would issue $1 million every year, a 10-year $1 million, so that in year 10, you pay back a million. Then in year 11, you pay back a million. Then in year 12, you pay back a million, et cetera, for 5 years. That's sort of like, that's another kind of sinking fund using serial bonds. Matter of fact, interestingly enough, there's a trick that traders do, very common, where they will turn a single issue bond into a serial bond. They do this with treasuries, where they'll buy a pile of treasuries, let's say 10-year treasury notes. And then what they'll do is they'll repackage them so that they are serial bonds, each part of the total that they borrow, that they lent the government. I'm not going to get too far into this. It's kind of an arcane world, and actually, technically, it's kind of an accounting thing. And I've already expressed my feelings about accountants, and I get hurtful comments from accountants because of what I say about them. But do know this, and I'm giving you a narrative here, I'm giving you the background of bonds and all of that. But, let me think about this. So if I give you a bond problem, immediately you know that the face value is 1,000. That's done, okay? I don't tell you. Don't ask me. There's a place on the calculator in the solver that I'll show you that says FV. Now that means future value. It also means face value. So if you're doing bonds, you always automatically put 1,000 in that FV slot. Always. Just do that. Now the coupon. The coupon is expressed as a percent of the face value. So if I say the coupon is 5%, then you immediately put 0.05 times 1,000 into the PMT, payment slot. Let me say that again. As soon as you see the coupon, that goes in the PMT slot. Now, I warn you about that because there's going to be another percentage. It's going to be called the yield. That goes in the I percent. Don't confuse the coupon. As soon as you see coupon, just automatically get that into that PMT slot. Now, most books start out with simple, assume that the payments are once every year. Okay, that's, you know, that's okay. But that's not how it works. They actually are made, the payments are made every 6 months. So when we do a little bit more fancier, more realistic, we'll make the payment half of it, and we'll make the number of periods twice as many, because it'll be twice as many as years in the payment. And you'll see all this in a minute here. A couple of other things. Maturity is when it's due. The term is how long it has left until it's due. So if I were to see an IBM 2030, I would know that the term was 8 years. So that's what you put in N. We don't know when that bond was issued. Really doesn't even matter. Probably IBM, it was a 20-year debt issue. So, okay. So it would have been issued in 2010. Yeah, 2010. Okay. But really, that doesn't matter. All that matters is the term, how much time the bond has left. Now, the primary market, that's where the company is actually issuing the paper and getting the loan proceeds. The secondary market is where we can buy bonds. Now, a lot of corporations invest in bonds. They buy them in the primary market when the company borrows, or they might even buy them in the secondary market just to pad their portfolio. Bonds are safer than stocks. Many corporations have absolute rules about thou shalt not buy stock for your pension plan, or you will not buy stock with money we have at the end of the year. They'll have literally a written policy, you must buy bonds. And they'll also specify the quality of the bonds. Bonds can go from investment grade, super safe, low coupon because they're safe, clear through to what are called, now the dirty word for it is junk bonds, but we are not supposed to say that anymore in polite company. We call them high yield bonds, okay? High yield bonds. So, you know, yeah, they're junk. As a matter of fact, Netflix, those, remember I mentioned Netflix? That paper they issued, that 15-year paper, that was actually junk bonds. You're saying Netflix, junk bonds? Well, yeah, they borrowed so much money. The more you borrow, the riskier you are that you're not going to be able to pay it back. Netflix has borrowed money out the butt. And so, I mean, you can invest in these high-yield bonds. They're cheap. And I mean, you can take a roll of the dice on them that they'll come through, but they probably won't. They'll go into bankruptcy and then you have to divvy up. And I'll go through that. I might go that through that in one of the, in a Zoom session, or maybe next week I'll show you that if the company defaults, we can't pay our interest this month or this quarter, then what happens is automatically there's a bankruptcy proceeding. Now the company's going to try to keep the bondholders from taking the company and destroying it. They'll go to a bankruptcy court and say, bankruptcy court, make the bondholders stand down and we'll try to work something out with them. A reorg, as we call it, or a refi. But if that doesn't work, well, the corporation just gets liquidated and the seniority of the bonds, the ones that have a top priority are paid first, and if there's money left, then the senior subordinates get paid, and if there's any money after that, the juniors, and then the junior subordinates. And somewhere way down the list, you might get customers who prepaid orders, you might get the workers who were owed salary, but they're the last one. Now, there are two kinds of these bonds. There are debentures, which are uncollateralized, and mortgage bonds, which are backed by an asset.
Wait, what's the first one?
Okay, they're called debentures, D-E-B-E-N-T-U-R-E, debenture. Now, a debenture is just like a promissory note. There's nothing backing it. Now, obviously, those are a little riskier because you see a mortgage bond, if the company goes tap city, there is actually an asset that was listed that belongs to you. So in other words, you might have a factory that is the pledge in a mortgage bond for $50 million. So if the company goes bankrupt, that factory is liquidated and those cats get that money. If there's more than that, then it goes into the general pool. But obviously mortgage bonds are safer. As a matter of fact, many of you, if you haven't already, you will be issuing a mortgage bond yourselves, backed by a house. A mortgage is actually, well, I got a mortgage on my house. No, you got a loan and it was collateralized with a mortgage document pledging an asset. That's technically what it is. Going real fast here, listen to the podcast so that you can go back through this. I appreciate that this is kind of a speedy thing. If you have me 2 nights a week, well, you get a lot more of this, but you probably also want to kill yourselves after the second night of every week with how much I pour at you. But this is standard stuff. Now, let me go back here and step back for a minute. Well, how does a corporation borrow? Does it just write paper and hold it up on the street? No. A well-heeled corporation that's well-known, it's got lawyers and accountants and all that kind of stuff, and it's got some kind of cash flow. It goes through an investment bank, just like a stock offering does. You will never buy, none of us will ever buy primary issue stock or bonds. An investment banking syndicate does a firm underwriting. They buy it and then they sell it in the secondary market to clients. So in other words, if a company wants to borrow $100 million, there's an investment banking syndicate that lends them the money, gets those bonds, and then they sell them to investors. That's how it usually works. Now that process, The investment, this whole thing, I went through it, and there was something kind of exciting about it, but there was something painfully tedious. And then there came a time when it was illegal for me to do it. They made laws that only fancy lawyers and accountants could be involved in this. But the process goes, if you're going to borrow $100 million, you go to an investment bank, say in Chicago, and you say to them, okay, we want to borrow this money. So then they go out to their capital sources, these huge pools of money, life insurance companies, trust funds, pensions, things like that. They say, okay, we got this company. It's going to wants to borrow $100 million. Here's all of its credentials. Sniff up its butt all you want, and then come back to us. Tell us what interest rate you are willing to take to lend this money. They might say 8%. And the company says, are you nuts? No, we can't. 8%, we're a safe company. We've got a great rating with Moody's and all that. 6%. Back and forth, there will be this kind of negotiation to find a coupon that everyone can live with. Okay, 7%. And then it's filing the paperwork with the SEC and with the states and all this kind of stuff. But there's also another thing involved that's not really in a stock offer. There is an indenture agreement. It is the loan papers. And believe me, I had taught this 15 years before I ever actually saw one of these indenture agreements for a bond issue. One of my former students, I was talking to him, he was in New York City. He was near Wall Street. I said, we were going to come to town. We talked about where we were going to eat and how expensive the pastrami sandwich was that I always loved there. But I said, I got a question for you. Do you happen to be able to find me an indenture agreement? I've never seen one. He said, well, yeah, we got them kicking around here. So when I went there, he said, we talked. And I said, oh, remember you asked for an indenture agreement? And he pushes this folder across the table. And I thought, well, there's a lot of other stuff in here. It was this thick. No, that was just the indenture agreement. It has what are called covenants. It starts out with the whereas, wherefore, who farted, you know, party of the first part, party of the second part, all the legalese. And then it just goes through all of these requirements that are the expectations of both sides, the party borrowing and the counterparty lending. It was amazing. There was even a part in there called the bond trustee. The bond trustee represents the lenders, and the bond trustee is literally sitting in the corporation watching them to make sure they don't do anything that puts the bondholders at inordinate risk. The bond trustee can literally say no to projects, to dividends. So think about this. You, sir, could be the CEO, and you're the CFO, you're the CTO, you got a great project. Man, we're going to put money into this. We're going to ride this thing up. And the bond trustee, me, said, no, you're not. Said, what? No, you're not going to do this. Well, why not? This could make a fortune. Exactly. You're taking a risk that we don't need. You see, we're going to get a fixed amount of money back, our coupon and our face. That's all we're going to get. No matter how sky high you go, all we get is that fixed amount of money. Your shareholders are going to love it. That's the gains to leverage. You know, borrow money at a fixed rate and whatever, the sky's the limit on what you do with that money. But you can also take an ask back. And that means that you go bankrupt and I lose my investment. So the bond trustee is going to say, no, you're not going to do that bond, Jared, because that puts our cash flow at risk. That earnings before interest and taxes, that revenue could go up, great, I still get the same interest. That revenue could go down, and that's bad because I don't even get my interest because the operating income isn't enough to cover my interest expense. Remember the times interest earned? So the bond trustee can say no to that. Well, we're going to issue a dividend. We want to be really generous with our people, so it's going to be $1.50 per share. This thing, I'll say, no, you're not. Well, we got the money? No, I know. We like to keep that money and reinvest in the company. And same things. Don't be giving away the candy store. But our bondholders, our stockholders, are going to love us if we give them a dividend. I don't care.
We don't represent the shareholder, we represent the debt. So no, you're not going to do a dividend, it's that generous. You see the countering interests of the two, the agencies here? On one hand, the incentive of the management is to push the stock price up through investment, make the shareholders happy so they buy more stock, you reap dividends. But I, as a bondholder, don't give a rat's ass about that. All I care about is you get me my money back, my fixed amount of money. So there is that in those covenants. And there's other things too in there. You can see some interesting things in the covenants. One's called callability.
What did you call this?
Oh, it's called callability. Let me write these down. I'm kind of sitting here on this lame leg instead of driving. Writing. Okay, a bond can be callable. Now the callability, what that means is, suppose I lend money to you, sir, at 8%, at 8%. So you're paying 8%, I'm happy, la, la, la. Now interest rates, let's say that the prevailing interest rates for this level of risk in a bond dropped to 6% over a few years. Well, I say there, me and you, I got you at 8%. And you say, my bond is callable, I'm gonna pay you off. I can pay you off now? Well, you can? Yes, and then you borrow the money back again at 6% from other suckers. See, I was expecting 8% for 30 years, maybe. You just screwed me over. You called the bond in early. That's a call provision. Now, here's the other side of it that's nasty, too. I'm a lender. Suppose interest rates skyrocket to 12%. Well, you see, I'd really love to have you call that bond in so I get reinvested at 12%. You're not going to do that. So the bondholder is in a double, the lender, in any kind of lending agreement, is in a catch-22. If interest rates go down, he's going to refi on a call. Just like mortgage, just like you would refi on a home. If interest rates go up, I'd like to have my money back so I can reinvest it at this higher rates the economy's got now. You're not going to do that. You're going to hang. And I'm going to be upset by that. So a callable bond has a little bit more risk to meet the lending. So I'll ask for a higher coupon if that's a covenant, if there's a callability covenant in the indenture agreement.
There's another one too. I don't know if the book even mentions this one, but if you invest in bonds, and actually bonds are a decent investment. If you're when you get to be old, bonds are what you should be investing in probably. But there's a covenant called a convertibility covenant. A convertible bond.
You, sir, lent me money. You bought a bond. I issued a bond to you. $100 million bond. 6%. So I've got to pay you $6 million a year. If I don't pay it, you haul me into bankruptcy court, you liquidate me, and I'm gone. But if there's a convertibility provision, under certain circumstances, I can say, oh, I'm going to turn your bond into stock. Can you imagine how thrilled you would be about that? Because if I can't pay you as a lender to me, that part of my stock sucks. And I'm going to give you a pile of that stock, and I no longer have to worry about you being my adversary. You're my buddy now. You're one of the shareholders. You can imagine how thrilled that is when a convertibility provision is exercised in a bond. Be careful when you are investing. Look for these little seeds. A little subscript C will tell you that there's a call or a convertibility provision hiding in there. And that means that it is riskier than you might think it is.
So those kinds of covenants, you do have to keep an eye on. That doesn't mean you avoid them. I mean, I know some investors bond investors who look for trouble like that. As a matter of fact, there are some private equity funds where what I'll do is I'll set a company up, make it feel like I'm going to fix it, do a reorg, make everything right, and all they have to do is give me some stock and stuff like that, and then I'll lend them a whole pile of money, but I'll have a callability provision in there. and I know that the company's going to start slipping again, and it won't be able to pay the interest on the loan that I gave them. So automatically the company will convert the bond to stock, and then suddenly I'm the majority shareholder and I kick out the old people and take over the corporation for myself. It's a setup, and it's done, and I have participated in it once. Where essentially what we did, we lent the company a pile of money. But what we did was we lent them $120 million. I was way down on the food chain in this. But they got only $100 million. Well, where did $20 million go? Well, that was our fee for saving their lives. Oh, by the way, we also had them issue us a nice little pile of stock. So what we did was we pumped the company up. We're saving this company. Press release, PR Newswire. Get it, see if we can get it on Business Insider, get it in Forbes and all that, Barron's. And then the company's stock price goes up. We sell off a bunch of the stock that we had gotten from them. So we got some play money with our $20 million that we got from them. And then we knew very well the company was just going to, like that, dive into the ground. And then the bonds that we had lent them, they would default on them because they couldn't afford the interest because the company really sucked. And then what we did was we just said, oh, you can't pay it? Okay, well, I guess you're going to have to convert that bond to stock. Oh, my goodness, we're the majority shareholders now. We're voting your asses out as the board of directors, putting ours in. We're going to change the course of this company and make it what we want. Matter of fact, what we usually do with those is we sell them to a private company and sneak it in so it becomes a public company without going through SEC nightmares. That's called a reverse merger. Anyway, okay. Enough of the preliminaries in the dance. I did mention there are three rating services that give bonds credentials. There's Moody's, there's Fitch, and there's Standard & Poor's. Now, they have different... Their rating systems are different. Like you might see one that has the best bonds, the highest investment grade, AAA. Then you would see capital A, little a. Then another one might be capital A. And then you see another one, capital B, minus sign. So they have slightly different rating systems. It drives me crazy trying to figure out what they're saying. Generally speaking, if there are no A's in it, it's considered sub-investment grade. If you don't see, and that's just a loose rule. It's my loose rule. You get down to C, and of course that's pure junk. Excuse me, high yield. When you get down there to C. Now, just a personal story. They're better than they used to be. It was not that many years ago that these companies were really dodgy and their ratings could be highly misleading. Standard & Poor's was disastrous. They were giving high grades to bonds that were actually a pile of complex, nasty derivatives. And that was one of the things that caused the 2008 nightmare, the toxic debt instruments, if you remember that back that far. That was what was going on, was that the bonds that Standard & Poor's were giving AAA ratings to, inside of them were these monstrous derivatives. They were something that didn't actually have any value other than for what was underneath it, giving it value. And when what was underneath it disappeared into a pit, you didn't necessarily see it right away. Even worse was that some of these bonds had in their portfolio derivatives of derivatives of derivatives. In other words, this derivative, this option, was underlain by another option, which was underlain by another option.
In one case, the options chain was 17 long. We never did find where there was an actual asset anywhere underneath that chain of options. Never did find it. How bad was this toxic waste mess? See, because once that house of cards, one card slipped in 2008, the whole house, and all of these very fancy companies whose policy was thou shalt not invest in anything less than AAA, well, they had invested huge amounts in these toxic assets, these toxic bonds. When I say huge, what is the notional value of this on the books of banks, corporations of all kinds, trust funds, pension funds around the world that is still out there rotting zombies on their balance sheet that actually have no value whatsoever? Best estimate we've got notional value, $64 quadrillion. Yeah. So buy your bonds and make sure you read the damn indenture agreement. Or just don't trust a bond that is some kind of a complex instrument because you're asking for it. Even I, with all my years in the business, I knew that there was something going on. I had no clue that they were being that ballsy, that bold in what they were doing. Now, another thing I'll tell you about this. One of my experiences with Moody's. Back in the late 1990s, I had a couple of corporations that were in decent shape, and I wanted to get them to the point where they could issue bonds and get an investment bank syndicate to say, yeah, we'll buy your bonds. So obviously what I would need is Moody's to give a preliminary rating on a bond issue. You know, I would have been happy with A, even a double B, I would have been thrilled with it. And so I talked to a representative of Moody's. I'd never done it before. And she said, well, you fill out the application. And I said, well, what's the fee for that? And she said, well, the application is $1,000. I thought, well, that's not bad. You know, this is decent. It was $1,000. That was the number. And she said, and I said, well, how long did this take? She said, about 2 years. What? 2 years? Well, we had a business. Oh, she said, well, we have an expedited service. And she gave the impression that this expedited service not only would get it to you, get you a rating within 3 weeks, it would also get you the rating that was the best that they could do for you. In other words, if I said, I'd really love to see an A, they'd make it happen. That fee, $1 million. So I could buy a rating. Now, that was a long time ago, and I'm not saying that that happens now. I'm out of the business. But I swear to you, that it was there was nothing in there that you could say, this is illegal as hell. But there was clearly the implication that if I paid that expedited fee, I'd get a rating that was awesome. For a little companies like I did, are you kidding me? So I went to the board of directors, and they said, well, you know, at the bank, right now we've got, I don't know, what is it, about $12,000? Not even close, sucker. Sort of like getting top billing on a page in Google. Yeah, you can take the chances or you can pay Google an insane amount of money, as I've found out with my own corporation. Anyway, that's the backdrop, all of this stuff that I'm giving you here. So it's sort of the side story. Now, one thing about bonds is that bonds quote on the 10th of, they quote on the 100th is what they quote. So in other words, bond prices are going to be somewhere around $1,000. That's par. It's like the fulcrum. A bond that is just as risky now as it was when it was issued will sell at par or very close to par. Now, if it starts to deviate, that has to do with the risk of the bond changing. So an 8% coupon bond, and the company gets riskier than 8%, well, that bond will fall in price. It will sell at a discount to par, 980, 950, something like that. If the company gets safer, well, that coupon is more than the investors want. So there will be a bid process that will push it to a premium to par. So you'll see some bonds that will quote at $1,015. You'll see some bonds quoting at
980. But know this, that's not what you're going to see. You're not going to see a price, you're going to see a quote, which is 1/10 of the price. So they'll say, well, what? Oh, okay, let's talk here. What would be the, what's the, quote me on Netflix, NFLX, on one of those junk bonds of theirs. And I'd say right now it's at 98.50 on the 100, or 98.50. That is not the price. That's a quote. It's 1/10 of the price. Historically, that's been around for hundreds of years. There was a simple reason. Back in the 1700s and the early 1800s, when the stock markets were first lighting up in Philadelphia and New York and places like that, every morning the financial printing presses would print off these giant broadsheets. Those were the opening quotes those were the settlements for the night before on all kinds of stocks and bonds. Well, how did they save column space on the bonds? They quoted them on the 100. That saved them one digit of space on each of the bond columns. That's why we quote them on the 100. A personal story about this. Many years ago, I was good friends with a very wealthy man, and he thought he was an investment genius. He had a computer before almost anyone had one. He was connected to what back then was the intranet, an internet that wasn't the internet. That hadn't come along yet. And one day he decided he was going to throw some money into bonds. So he bought a bunch of bonds. He bought 10 bonds, and he calls me, and he is having a fit the next day, because he found out that he was on the hook for $9,870 plus commissions. Ripping me off! Those were $98.70, those bonds were. Frank, you dumbass. He had no idea that they were quoting on the 100, but that was only 1/10 of the price. I'm going to sue everybody! Matter of fact, he had firearms and he was a drunk half the time. I thought he was going to go shoot somebody, so I didn't go over to his house to calm him down. I just called his wife and told her to go in and talk to him. I didn't like the lady anyway. So, anyway, that was a true story. I mean, watch it. They quote. So if I say quote the bond, you're going to come out of the calculator. Oh, that's $1,015, and you're going to put that on the test, and I'm going to say, no, that's not it. It's $101.50. That's the quote. If I say quote the bond, you give me 1/10. If I say what's the price of the bond, you give me the actual price. And the only reason I do these things is that I assume that somewhere in your lives you're going to cross paths with real investments. And I've got to pour as much as I can at you in the short time we have together, so that you at least have somewhere in your mind some of the things that you can trip and fall on. Now, let me show you. I'm going to start with a discount bond, a discount paper, a 1-year treasury note. Yeah, we're good. A 1-year treasury. Now remember, this is a discount bond, a discount paper. You will buy it, and a year later, you will get $1,000 back. Your interest is the difference between what you paid for it and $1,000. That's how treasury bills work, T-bills. They are a highly desirable interest at the auction. It used to be literally a table with all of these different government papers, treasury papers. They have these bills. They have notes, they have bonds. Sometimes they had just a specialty auction with one of them. And investors, lenders, would come to the auction and buy the paper, which means they were lending our government money. That's how it works. That's what the national debt is. All of the paper that has been bought. Who buys it? Well, the Federal Reserve. This note, these notes that I showed you, they are actually backed by the Treasury paper called our Federal Reserve. Prints money, goes to the auctions, and buys the debt, and the money then goes to the treasury. Yes, that is how it works. Who else buys them? Foreign governments buy them by the tons. The Chinese have literally trillions of American dollars. How do they have them? If I buy a toaster from China, I import a toaster and export $10. The People's Bank of China takes the $10, and then they keep that, and they give the merchant in China the equivalent in the Chinese currency, the yuan. That was how they cheated us for many years, was because they would overprint and give the Chinese merchants many more yuan than they really earned. And so the Chinese merchants could lower their prices and kill us because the Chinese were giving a higher exchange rate than it really should have been. They were doing what was called pegging. They were giving their merchants 8.28 yuan for each dollar. When you sent a dollar over there, the Chinese bank, the People's Bank of China, would keep the dollar and then issue the merchant 8.28 yuan. What should it have issued? Probably about 3 yuan. So that way the merchants could lower their prices and still be profitable. And they could just destroy us, which they did for many, many years. Why did we let them do that? It was originally, it was a neoconservative, neoliberal understanding that if we could stimulate the middle class in a communist country, give them economic freedom, then they would have the power to demand political freedom and we could break the back of the Reds in China. It didn't work. Turns out they were vicious communists. Funny how that works. So later, we didn't stop doing it. Once we realized the original idea wasn't going to work, we should have stopped them pegging, but we didn't because they were taking so many of our dollars that we could spend like you wouldn't believe, and the Chinese would lend us the money to do it. We could have insanely low taxes. We could have two theater wars, which we were running at the time. We could have all the entitlement programs, and it would be financed by the Chinese who were using our dollars to do it. So what did they get in return? We have to pay them back with interest forever. And it keeps going. So the Chinese are at these auctions too. But we're going to do one here. A nice, modest auction. Okay. So we're going to have an auction. And I am the auction hostess. My name is Mabel. And I've got all this treasury, these eagles, and you, sir, come in. You're looking around, well, hello there, young man. Are you here for your first eagle auction? Well, yes, you are. My goodness, you are such a handsome young man. I'll bet you're just dying to own one of these. Isn't this a pretty, pretty T-bill? I'll tell you what. We'll let you get this one right here, and I'll take care of it for you. $975. Now remember, you get $1,000 back in 1 year. Are we good for it? Yeah, of course we are, Ed. Earl! One T-bill! Drive me through the guard, bang it! $975.
So you pay $975 for that? Okay, what's the face? What did I say face is always, never ask?
$1,000.
So how much interest do you earn in 1 year? You earn $25. So your yield is going to be $25 is what you made on an investment of $975. Do not put that $1,000 down there. That's the trick. Don't fall for that.
I will deliver. I promise you, I'll find a way to see if you can. I'll give you the answer that would be the right answer with $1,000. And then I'll say, wrong.
Now, if you work that out, that comes out to be 2.56%. Decent.
It's a low interest rate, but I mean, government is always going to pay. Understand this, that the government is the safest investment you can make.
Well, I heard the government would go bankrupt.
No, it won't. Don't you understand? If the government needs money, it can raise taxes. Why not? Of course, it can print money. That's exactly why I told you it'll do that.
And suppose pretty, well, what happens to the pretty person that broke it?
You don't just invade a country, for God's sake.
I mean, geez, we're Americans. You think I'm joking? This is exactly how it works. That's why we are so safe. One, we got printing presses as far as the eye can see. We can print the money, and if that doesn't work, well, we'll say Saddam, or some new Saddam, has weapons of mass destruction, we'll attack his country and take his damn oil. That's how it works. That's why we're so safe, is because we have all of this way that we can back it. Corporations can't do that. You can have corporations that are fairly safe. Like, for example, a one-year discount that would be issued by a corporation, it might be like 2.70%. We would call that the credit default premium. The possibility of default is just 14 basis points. But we actually measure that to see how wide that credit default premium is between a government issue and a corporate issue. AAA, AA, we go down the line. So what we're watching for is to see if those credit default premiums expand or contract over time. And that tells me whether the general risk of corporations is getting greater or lesser over time. But right now, okay, so a year later, well, there you are again. Well, isn't that great? You came back, you just got $1,000. You want to do this again, don't you? Sorry. Yes, indeed. We got one right here. 975, and you look around. I don't see anyone. Why is there no one? You can't find any auditors. What happened? Oh, they pissed off the Chinese, so they're going to sit and petulantly on the sidelines this time. Tell you what, I'll give you 950.
950, are you out of your mind?
950 or nothing.
Okay, fine.
All right, by the way, are you single?
950, Earl! 950! Don't drag it through the garden, he doesn't deserve any! Anything like?
Yeah, I was going to get my sciatica fixed, but they were going to send me to this clinic, and I said, I can't afford that one. It's a Mayo clinic, so I told them to hold the Mayo.
Wow, the hell with you people. 950! 1,000? So this time you earned 50 simoleons. So now your yield is $50 over 950, which is 5.26%. And right there you are seeing one of the most fundamental principles of all finance.
Sir, when the price of the debt, when the price of the security went down, what happened to the yield? That is a fundamental law. It is not finance, it's not economics, it's mathematics. Price goes down, yield goes up. Always, for everything.
So when I watch bond prices, I am watching to see if they're falling, because that tells me that the yields on treasuries are going up, and everything is pretty much, all interest rates kind of have what's the government's yield as their substrate, and they go up and down with that. Now, riskier things would be at a higher rise and fall, but basically the government's interest rates are going to be the ones that drive all interest rates. So as the government borrows more, that means that the supply of debt, government debt, goes up. Supply goes up, price goes down. Price goes down, yields go up. It's a lockstep relationship. Again, if the government needs more money, the supply of that paper goes up. As the supply of the paper goes up, the price goes down. As the price goes down, mathematically, the yield rises. That's the way of all of it. So, in a very real sense, every day is another day for interest rates to rise and fall because of the government's borrowing policies. Now, how is it right now the government is borrowing money, and has been for some of since
Well, since about 2017, 2018, government has been borrowing money insanely fast because it lowered the corporate tax rate down to almost half of what it had been before. So that was created a great deal of need for money. A great deal of not taxes. So the government had to find money from borrowing. Well, instead of borrowing, the government was bullying the Fed into printing money. Yeah, we're going to borrow, but Fed, print money and just buy it real fast. Of course, like I said, the Chinese were there, the Saudis were there, the Japanese, the Canadians. Everyone lends us money because we just can't live within our means. But at the same time, they lend us money because we are a phenomenally good investment. Like I said, we're never going to default on our debt. So we're an attractive investment, even if we are borrowing like there's no tomorrow. And then it got much worse with the COVID and the all those checks that were written to everyone and his mother. That, of course, how did we do that? We borrowed trillions of dollars. How did we pay for it? We issued debt. Doesn't that make the interest rates go up? Well, no, because the Fed was printing money like there was no tomorrow, so that there would be no interest rate impact effect, so interest rates could stay low to keep the economy rolling. Eventually it has to stop, because you print too much money, eventually you get inflation. I was warning about this 4 years ago, and sure enough, it's coming to fruition now. We now have to pay the piper, okay? So anyway, there is the fundamental principle of finance right there. Price and yield are inversely related. So that's the one thing. If you see the price of a bond going down, the yield on the bond is going up. You say, well, wait a minute, the coupon is fixed. It sure is. But you see, there's where the extra mechanism comes in. The price, the coupon is what was the right price for a $1,000 price. That coupon was the right interest rate at the time of issue. But after the time of issue, there will be issues, things in the company, things in the macro economy, that will make investors want a higher or a lower interest rate. But that 8% is going to be fixed. So let's say that the company becomes better. Well, that would mean that investors would say, well, gee, you know, 8% kind of rich, it's kind of nice. Yeah. We really would be okay with 6.5% coupon. So that means that there will be buyers. Demand will go up and the price will rise above par. Similarly, let's say the macro economy, interest rates start going up. Well, bonds that were issued with low coupons in a low interest rate environment, well, those low coupons are not going to be able to keep pace with higher interest rates. So that's going to make those coupons undesirable, and investors are going to sell those bonds. And that will cause the price to fall, and that will mean that this hidden thing called the yield will rise. Let me show you, and now here's where I show you a couple of problems, where you'll see this in action. Now, I strongly recommend that you do it this way. The book shows you how you can do it with formulas, but let me tell you, let me start with one. Our world in finance works on prices. It actually doesn't work on interest rates. Prices imply interest rates. Do you see there that I was talking about prices? The yield was implied from the price, and that's the way it always is. We're quoting prices, but what's underneath it is the hidden yield that is being implied mathematically by that price. So let me do one like this. Suppose, and this is the unrealistic version, suppose an 8% 2035 is currently yielding
8.5%. What is the price of that bond? Now let me give you a perspective. That yield, the yield is what the market wants. The yield is what the market wants. The coupons is what the company is giving. It was agreed to long ago. In this case, that probably that bond was issued in 2015, maybe 2005. And that was 8% was good. That was exactly what the investors wanted. But now the investors just say, now we want 8.5%. So in this case, if I'm paying you 8%, but you want 8.5%, are you going to want more or less of my debt? If you want 8.5% and I say no, you get 8%. Then are you happy or unhappy? So your price is going to go up or go down. Are you going to buy those and try the price up or sell them and try the price down?
I should do this, I do this every time. You have to just think about it, do these over and over again.
You see, because I want 8.5%, the company's paying 8%, so that just pisses me off. Well, if I'm pissed off, I'm going to go buy more of that. I'm going to buy less of it, right? I'm going to get rid of it. So I'm going to sell it off, I'll drive the price down, and I'll flip the market. Here, everyone, give me something that you bought. Okay? That's the logic. With a place, I have Scottish ancestry, and there is whiskey in Scotland. It is so bad that in Gaelic, its name is ass. It tastes, I can't even describe it, it's horrible. And the first time I had it, I was beating my face and my hand, and the bartender said, "Would you like another one?" I said, "Yes, please." I just wanted to experience something that was that close to hell. But in general, no, get rid of it. So watch what happens when we do this. Now follow, write down the steps. Because if you write down the steps, you can do these day and night and without blinking an eye almost. But remember the words that I'm saying as I go along here. So you're going to go apps. Finance, or finance if you're from Decatur. I didn't say that. TVM solver. Apps, finance, TVM solver. And this is the term of the bond. How many years does this bond have left on it?
30.
Yes. Now remember, if we're doing this realistically, we do 13 times 2. But we'll just do an annual coupon payments for now. 13. Now the I percent is always the yield. You either know it and you key it in, or you don't know it and you solve for it. But I percent is the yield. See, there's a percent up there. You say, wait a minute, fat boy, there's a percent up there. Well, the yield is the I percent. And that is 8.5. Now it would be 8.5 divided by 2 if I were doing semi-annual payments, but we're just doing an annual one. Now, the price value, that's what I'm going to find. They ask me, what's the price? That's it. Leave it alone. Don't clear it. Don't, for God's sake, don't ever delete. Now the payment. The payment is where you put the coupon, 0.08 times 1,000. Now, remember here, mostly in apps, you put in just the percent. See how I did 8.5% up there? But if you're actually doing arithmetic, you have to use the decimal. Now, one more thing, the FV. The face value. What's the FV?
1,000.
Now, one thing I caution. Leave these alone for God's sake. Just make sure that was on end. Sometimes I try to do it on a test. If you're going to do a future, one of those ones where you're putting money into the bank for some future need, I do that at the end because that's when you have to use the beginning. If I do it at the early on in the test, then people forget and they leave it on begin when they're doing these normal problems. So I try to make sure that you are on the end just by the way the problems are laid out. Now go back up here to PV. Alpha solve. Well, spank me. Look, it's selling at a discount to par. If the yield is above the coupon, the bond sells at a discount to par. If the yield is above the coupon, the bond sells at a discount to par. If the yield is above the coupon, the bond sells at a discount to par. Now, if I say something three times, you can bet it's going to be on the test. Sometimes I'll say it two times, but if I say it this many times, I am trying to reinforce this. Get it in your notes, and you start reading it. You might even want to get this as a tattoo. It's very tasteful. Let's go back up here. Let's say that the yield was below the coupon. What happens if the market says, well, 7.5% would have been okay. You're paying me 8? Wow. Let's go back and see what the price would be in this case. Alpha solve. Well, butter my biscuits and call me delicious. It sells at a premium to par.
So if the yield is above the coupon, the bond sells at a discount to par?
That's right. And if the yield is below the coupon, then the bond sells at a premium to par. Now, show me that you're impressed.
Both the bonds. Did you close the bond?
I think the price is
I'll give you a break here. It's 104.06 on the high. Well, the bond 104.06. The price of the bond is $1,040.63.
The quote on the bond is 104.06. Now, don't ever put a dollar sign on it if you're on a quote. Because that's not a dollar. That's a quote. So the quote is a tenth of the price. But did you see that? The coupon stays, the coupon was set in the indenture agreement long ago. Now, I want you to watch something, though. What happens if we are closer to maturity? Let's say we're only 4 years from maturity. Watch that 1,040. Whoops, try that again. Four. Alpha. Ooh. Look at the what about 8.5 when it was above the coupon. What about 2 years? Do you see how, whether it's above or below, it's approaching par? Think about it this way. With only a couple of years left, you're going to get $1,000 in just a couple of years. So the price is not going to be able to deviate much from par. I mean, a year out, it really wouldn't matter a whole lot how far the yield and the coupon were apart from each other. You're going to get your $1,000 in a year. So no one's going to bid that bond too far away from par. So it doesn't matter which way it is. No matter whether it's above or below, premium or discount, as you approach the term, as the term approaches zero, all bonds approach par. As the term approaches zero, all bonds approach par. Unless they're going to bankrupt or something like that.
Now, what I just told you, I guarantee you I'm going to ask that on the test. Guaranteed. It doesn't matter whether it's at a premium or a discount. It doesn't matter if the yield is above or below the coupon.
Okay, you said as the time approaches zero?
The price approaches par. In other words, 1,000. Now, by the way, let me back up here. 13 alpha solve. Now, I want to show you what the effect is if it's actually 2 half coupons a year. Remember that in real life, the coupons are semi-annual. They're not annual. And by the way, there's an interesting thing that there are even some companies that are paying the coupon in 12 pieces a year. Why are they doing that? Because that sort of syncs up with pension funds and what they have to pay a monthly pension to their people in the pension. Kind of an interesting thing. It's not very common yet, but I've heard talk about it. Now, watch this. I'm going to take 13, and I'm going to say, suppose that these are twice a year for half of the amount. 13 times 2. Now, that would mean that the yield is going to be calculated twice a year. So it would be only half of the 8.5 on each rotation. And that would also, one last thing, that would mean that the coupon was 8% on 1,000. Divided into 2 pieces a year. Now I want you to watch what happens to the price. It's not a lot. And if you're on an exam, and I'm going to ask you these, just like these, I will anticipate that you use the semi-annual form. But if you don't, I'm going to try to give enough leeway that you'll still get the answer, okay? Watch what happens to the price. Alpha solve. See how small the difference is? I mean, if the bond is still like 30 years out there, it's going to be a couple of bucks. And technically, you should probably do it simply because if you're in a bank, yeah, that was like a dollar for one bond, but if you're talking about a million of them, that can be a lot of money that you're miscalculating. Now, I'm going to take you to the other side. Like I said, the price thing, the way I did it here, I had the yield and I found the price. And I'll ask you one of those on the exam. But more realistically, the market trades in prices, and then we back calculate into what that yield was supposed to be. That's how it really works, because we're buying and selling based upon bid and ask on a price of something. So, you know, a more realistic example would be, ZLB 4.85%, 2029. Is quoting at 102.40. What's the yield? This is the one that would be real, because we would see the little number, ticker symbol, little price going up and down, 102.40, 102.39, 102.44. It'd be, the price would be what would be bid and ask on. So we back into the yield from the price. So in this case, we would have, and I'm just going to do this annually, we would have a 7-year. Now in this case, we don't have the yield. Don't ever delete a number. Just leave it there. We'll come back and recalculate. But I'm asking for the yield, so the I percent is what we're going to do the alpha solve. Go down here. What's the price value? remember PVs, I've mentioned this before, always put in a present value as a negative value. It's just the way these calculators are. Negative. Now remember, that's a quote, so it's going to have to be 10 times that. The price is $1,024. The payment is 0.0485 times 1,000. Now, I said this before, I'll say it again. Don't be an arithmetic hero. Let the calculator do the calculations. Always. I better do it. I should repeat it for the paper, 4.85. No, just do it on the calculator. Don't be fancy. Leave everything else alone. Now come back up here and we can get the yield. Now, before I do it, ask you a question.
You see that quote I gave you there? Is this bond selling at a discount or a premium to par?
Discount.
What's par? Remember what par is? Actually, I should say, par is $1,000 or $100. Okay? Try to see if it's Now we can answer me. Is that a premium or a discount to the par? Big no. Premium to par. So, in other words, investors like this bond. In other words, this coupon is too good to be true. So it's a great coupon. So you would think that the investors would not need, they're saying 4.85%,
that's awesome. So the yield should actually be below this. Because that, if it's selling at a premium to par, that means that the investors are saying that 4.85% is better than it needs to be. Let's see what happens. Alpha, solve. Yep, 4.44%. 4.44%.
Professor?
Yes?
I would ask PV equal 1,000?
Yeah.
Or 100?
1,000. You never ever use the quote. Use the dollars. Yeah, it's always 10 times. If I say a quote, now if I had put a dollar sign on that, that would have been an actual price, but I didn't. And that's how you know for sure. But do you see that? I'm confirming I must have done this right because it was selling at a premium to par, which means the coupon was higher than the yield. Premium to par higher. Now let me show you one last thing here. Let me show you a junk bond. And I'll tell you a quick story about this. Now there are things like, there's a called a coupon yield. You take the coupon a company's paying divided by the current price, and it gives you kind of an idea of like your dividend yield. It's kind of like that. But I'm going to show you. Now junk bonds are characterized by having prices that are way below par. I mean, you'll see a bond that has a price of $423. That's junk. I mean, that's so far from par that it's ridiculous. But there are some investors who actually play these. Let me show you one. Show you an example. And this is not too far from what was going on. There was a company, and I won't mention its name, but it had gotten so close to bankruptcy, it was a miracle that it wasn't in bankruptcy. No investors wanted to get near this bond. The bonds had 12 years remaining on. And the prices of these bonds were like $700. You know, investors were selling the hell out of getting out from under them, so the price was just sliding down. That's junk. And the coupon was around 5.5%, I think. Oops. 0.055 on the 1,000. Now let me show you what the yield on that was, why we call them high yield. alpha solve 9.88%, way above the coupon. Okay? Now, in a case like that, you could say, well, the coupon 55 divided by 700, that's kind of a measure of how you're doing with this. But the real measure for people like this, bonds you don't buy for capital gains, because normally they don't go way up or way down. They don't go way up like stocks do. So they're not sexy that way. But in this case, there was an investor, and I had met him. He believed this company was going to recover. He figured this company can make it. Of course, if it hadn't, he would have lost pretty much all of his money. But he didn't, and that thing actually finished. And when it got about to year, it was like 2 years out, the bond had come back up to 985. So it's a classic example of what should never happen. You made a lot of money on the price increase of a bond. Normally, you don't buy bonds for price increases. You want a price increase to make your money? That's stock. Bonds just kind of float. But let me tell you one last thing. The bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. 10 times. So why doesn't all the news talk about bonds? They always talk about stocks. Exactly for what I said. Bonds are not sexy. They don't go way up in price, way down in price. They just float. They're safer. They're not volatile. And so there's nothing you can do to make them exciting on a news program. Kramer can't say, wow, today the bonds went up by like 5 cents. Yeah, that's about. So the bond market, massive. Massive compared to the stock market. But there's no sex appeal in it. So no one ever pays attention to these sweet little things that can always pay you, and even if they don't pay you, you can take the company away from the owners. That's all I have for you tonight. Thank you for being here.